Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Keller, your host, and I live the whole year for this show. This is the show that I'm thinking about as stuff happens all year. So happy old year to you. Can't say happy new year till tomorrow, so happy old year to you. This is our end of the year panel show where we reveal all the various categories of our Catholic Answers voting. We have folks from our Catholic Answers Radio Club and Catholic Answers Society 315 vote on things like the Catholic Story of the Year, the Catholic Person of the Year, the Pro-Life Person of the Year, the Word or Phrase of the Year, all kinds of stuff. And so we're going to go through all of that with our two very fine guests. First, sitting here in the studio with me, President of Catholic Answers, Chris Check. Hi, Chris.
Happy New Year, Cy.
Have you been looking forward to this for all year?
Every bit as much as you do.
That doesn't sound convincing. And our other guests?
I haven't seen any of the questions.
Well, I don't give you the answers. Oh. I did send you the questions.
Oh, you did send me the questions.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Did I send them to you, Joe?
You did?
Yeah, okay. All right.
I noticed all the answers were blank. I didn't know if I had to vote or not.
No, because you're supposed to find out. This is the big reveal show. Like, you guys are supposed to, that's why you're here. It's like, move that bus. And then you guys are like, oh, look at our house.
It's kind of like the questions. It's like the questions that preceded the motu proprio, right?
Nobody saw any of those either. No, come on now. Joe Heschmeyer is our other guest.
The end of the year, Dubia. I will not be answering any of these.
Joe Heschmeyer, new to Catholic Answers, used to be our friend. Now he's our colleague. Came to us on the Feast of St. Joseph this year, in the year of St. Joseph, and his name is Joseph. Joe Heschmeyer, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. So I noticed you called us both guests, and it occurred to me that the president of Catholic Answers is probably the least guest of all of the guests of the organization.
No, I feel like a guest. You know, that reminds me of that Gracie Slick song.
What's that?
Somebody to Love.
Don't you?
Is that Jefferson Airplane?
Yeah. Well, right, Jefferson Airplane. And she says, there's that great line in there, and your friends, they treat you like a guest.
Oh, yeah. She was a good lyricist, actually.
Yeah.
She
wrote I don't know. Did she write that?
You know,
but
I don't
that is that. Such a, oh, and your friends, they treat you like a guest.
Let's all sing the White Rabbit song now together. Like we have to be a thousand years old to even know who Grace Slick is anymore.
I feel like family in the studio here, Cy.
Well, let me tell you, just because Joe brought that up, the weirdest thing was in the olden days when Patrick Coffin was the host and I would guest here. I would drive here to be the guest host and I would say things like, and our guest today is Tim Staples. And that felt so weird. Like, I'm literally the guest in the building, and I'm saying our guest is Tim Staples. But all right.
It's like going over to someone's house and being like, let me welcome you to your home.
I know. That's exactly what I was doing. All right. So.
So maybe you're my guest, Cy.
I feel like I am. Yeah. Yeah. I think we're, look.
I hope I take.
Let's be honest.
Am I taking good care of you?
We're all just Jimmy Akin's guests here. If he wants us gone, we're gone. Okay. And sooner you get comfortable with that, Joe. All right. I got a whole bunch of categories. We voted on them. We lived an entire year just so we could do this show. The Earth circled the sun since the last time we did this. And now it is time. We'll start with, if it's all right with you, Catholic word or phrase of 2021.
We're sure about the Earth circling the sun?
Yeah, okay. I was wondering if that was going to offend your geocentrist.
That's established. We're sure on that one.
Wait a second. I'm so tired of you anti-science Christians.
Looks like the sun's been going. Just saying, it looks that way to me.
I felt like I...
Do you have some sort of cosmic course on Galileo?
Can I really make, as a matter of fact...
No, this is how I prove it. Every year, I leave something in space, and then I pick it up as we pass again the next year. That's how I know.
Joe was just giving a commercial for my CASA course on the Galileo Affair.
Ah, right. The Galileo Affair, which everyone gets wrong all the time. All right. I think what we'll do with these categories is I will ask you. Oh, yes. SchoolofApologetics.com.
Yep.
Everything's on sale right now.
It is.
Head over there, SchoolofApologetics.com. I'm sorry. I missed the opportunity to plug the merchandise boss.
Okay. The other stuff I'm not interested in, it's my course on the Galileo Affair. I want people to buy.
All right.
Everything else is on sale. That one is twice as much as normal.
All right. Do you guys want to suggest a Catholic word or phrase of the year before I tell you what the top three are? And that's what I'll do. I'll tell you some interesting ones if there are some interesting ones in these categories, but mostly we're going to do the top three.
Are we going to do a trifecta of Pacamama?
Oh.
Is it motu proprio?
No, neither of those. Also, although someone did write moro proprio, and I think they were going for motu proprio, just hit the wrong one. But Moro Proprio only got one vote, though. Oh. So we're not going with that. And Pachamama got one vote that said just to annoy Sai, because I said I don't want it to be Pachamama. And then another person wrote in capital letters Pachamama. So Pachamama still got two votes after all these years. Pachamama's going to get votes every year for as long as I'm here, I think. All right, so I'm going to tell you the top three words or phrases of the year, Catholic word or phrase of the year. Number three, Eucharistic coherence. What do you think?
Sure. Yep.
Yeah. What I like about it is that it actually like makes sense as a phrase. Like once you hear it, you're like, oh yeah, I see what you're doing with that. I really like it as a turn of phrase. It captures something big in two words.
It does feel like it was coined in 21.
I never heard it before 2021. Yeah. I never heard that phrase before.
I hadn't either.
I wonder who we can blame for that.
Is it Corleone? Did Archbishop Corleone do it?
Yeah.
I don't know. But all right. Well, I'm all for Eucharistic coherence.
I am too.
All right. Number two, you'll both be so happy to hear this, but especially Mr. Heschmeyer. Year Catholic, coming in second as Catholic word or phrase of the year of St. Joseph.
Glory.
Yes.
Don't say anything about it, because that would honor St. Joseph. If you just don't say anything, just stay quiet, like the guardian of the Lord.
We're going to a minute of silence.
Or if you mention Joe's book on St. Joseph.
You know,
probably also available on shop.catholic.com if you want to plug it other.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So a man named Joseph, Guardian for Our Times. The greatest book on St. Joseph published this year, other than Father Calloway's. Oh, sorry, Joe. I apologize.
It was not published this year.
That wasn't published this year.
Sorry about that. Neither was Father Calloway.
It preceded and possibly caused the year of St. Joseph.
Yeah, you know, we had the provincial of the Oblates of St. Joseph on, Father Matthew Spencer, this month. And I said, well, was it a big year for you? And I just like, did they warn you before it was coming? He said, no. He said, it just came out of nowhere. That he even the provincial of the Oblates of St. Joseph, nobody thought, let's shoot him an email and let him know this is coming. it just came out of nowhere.
So I have very, very high respect for Father Calloway. He's a first-rate priest and a dear friend. And he's done great work with this book. He does seem to have directly influenced this decision by the Holy Father,
which
he knew a guy who knew a guy who
talked to the Pope.
Yeah, who talked to the Pope.
Well, God bless the Pope for doing it, but man, does that help book sales or what? When you got a book, just get the Pope to declare a year.
We need to have the marketing department doing that for all of our books.
That's right.
Yeah.
We need a year for the early church was the Catholic Church coming up.
Yes, right. I think if the Pope could just declare next year the year of the early church, Joe can retire.
We have a recorded lecture by Father Calloway, a video recorded lecture by Father Calloway explaining this, telling the story of how.
Oh, we have it at Catholic Answers?
How it came about. Yes.
Oh, beautiful. Okay. Well, find that. Just go to Catholic.com.
Oh, you got to be in the 315 Society.
Oh, you got to be in the Society 315 for this one.
We're getting a lot of commercials.
I'm in Society 315. I haven't seen it.
All right.
I just got my shirt for Society 315 last night. Yeah.
Well, congratulations, Joe. You're a member of Society 315. Now, do you know the handshake? Have we shown you the handshake?
No.
When you're out next month, we'll show it to you.
Excellent.
All right. The winner, the grand winner for and leading by exactly one vote over Year of St. Joseph. Catholic word or phrase of 2021.
Bible in a year?
Synodality. Ding, 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 ding. Synodality.
Our listeners have a sense of humor.
Or synod on synodality. I just put them all together. So what do you think? Now, why do you think that's humor? Do you think people are making fun of the conference on conferences, the meeting on meetings?
Like you are right now?
Yeah. Sorry. I mean, that's what everybody has said. The jokes are all out there. So I don't know.
Discouraging was the art, especially, that some Italian drew that goes with this synod on synodality.
Yeah,
it was drawn with crayons.
Why? This is
the country that gave us Michelangelo.
No, but this is
Caravaggio,
this is the church that
Raphael.
Gives us all those things.
Yes, exactly.
And every church document has the goofiest art on it. Why do we do that? Why do we have these weird post Picasso? I mean, remember the time they accidentally put some Mormon art on that on a Catholic missalette? Do you either remember that?
Yes, I do. It was on a hymnal.
I don't want to say the company that did it in a north of us.
Might be named after a state.
Might be named after a Western state, but Come on, we have, like, why are we so bad at art nowadays?
Yeah, we kind of looked like the Maronis there. That's a Mormon pun for those who don't know. I was reading a Washington Post article about a restaurant review that took place in Lecce, where this guy had this like very modernist cuisine that he described as kind of a parody of food, where it was just like a droplet of food with like a meat infusion and just insane. And it was a hilarious review that he wrote. And this then led the owners of the restaurant to respond with a series of pictures of horses. And the first one is like an old kind of basic drawing of a horse, like the kind your kid might do. The second one was a much more realistic, like beautiful depiction of a horse. And the third one was like a really deconstructed, not quite even a horse, but maybe like resembles a horse in some way.
Yeah.
And the owners of the restaurant said, you know, anyone can do the first one. The second one has been perfected. It's been done so many times we're bored of it. And so now we're on to the third one. It's like, well, actually
we're
hungry.
Don't
want the I want the nice picture of the horse.
Yeah.
And also, I don't want to be like disoriented and deconstructed when I go for dinner. Yeah. I want to actually eat a meal. Like my body is not hip to your like, oh, this reminds us of what a food used to be. You know,
right.
Like,
you're
no,
not
it's
not an advance to deconstruct.
Exactly.
The deconstruction is never
an
advance.
It speaks of a boredom. And I think that really is kind of a spiritual apathy or a spiritual, boredom and frustration of just feeling like, well, we've done this thing. What is there next? And I think that's a really dangerous attitude and not an attitude of God.
No. And it derives also from the fruitless but unrelenting pursuit of equality. Fact is, Michelangelo and Raphael were considerably better at painting than I am.
Yeah. And then virtually anybody alive today.
Yes.
I mean, I'm sure there are very fine painters, but
it is interesting. However, there does seem to be, I know one thing, we're talking about our happy trends at some point or another. In architecture, we seem to have the worst behind us.
It does seem like that, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I've had enough of Frank Gehry now. I mean, can he stop? But there's still so many good trends in architecture.
Yes.
Yeah. And everybody who's imitating
painting
Frank
is not
Gehry,
catching up.
It.
And even the people who try to paint in a Renaissance style or a medieval style, I don't think they have the skill or the talent. I mean, there may be such painters today. When I was at St. Martin's Academy to do the graduation down in Fort Scott, there was a magnificent painting there. I met the artist of St. Martin dividing his cloak. In fact, I'm going to get a copy for the building. So there are some.
Yeah, there are. But all art is a product of culture as well as of individuals. And we just don't have culture anymore. I mean, I don't mean that.
Our culture doesn't create people
we're
like.
We're uncultured. I'm in the Patrick Deneen school of culture that if you have mass culture, that means you don't have culture.
Right.
Because culture is always and everywhere a local phenomenon.
It's also centered around the cultists, the mass. Like, you know, this is John Senior's kind of brilliant insight that if you want to understand the flourishing of Europe and for the last, like, 1,500 years, it was, well, we want to offer the sacrifice to the mass. We want to do that in a beautiful church. And then, like, you kind of build up a town around that that is centered around that and oriented towards it with a real, like, the fact that as Catholics we believe that God is true, good, and beautiful means that we take beauty, at least on paper, extremely seriously. And the church at her best has really promoted a beautification, not just of the church space itself, but of the whole surrounding environment. So everything becomes more beautiful with that Catholic sensibility.
I got to go to a break.
Okay.
And I got to just say, I'm just going to review the top three Catholic word or phrase of the year. We're going to do best Catholic story, Catholic person of the year, pro-life person, and story of the year. All that stuff is coming up. But as far as Catholic word or phrase of the year, number three was Eucharistic coherence. Number two was year of St. Joseph. And number one was synodality. And our panel managed to discuss none of them. We'll be right back with more right after this.
Catholic Answers Live.
Do you have a question but prefer to ask it privately? Catholic Questions can help.
Go to CatholicQuestions.com to ask your question online, email us, drop us a letter, or give us a call. Longtime Catholic Answers Live apologist and author Jim Blackburn or another Catholic Questions apologist will be happy to assist you. Catholic Questions proudly supports Catholic Answers Live, so visit us at CatholicQuestions.com today. That's CatholicQuestions.com.
Hey, this is Michael O'Neill, the Miracle Hunter. I'll be delving into the fascinating world of miracles and taking you on a hunt that explores the greatest mysteries and marvels of the Catholic Church. I'll be examining what constitutes a miracle, how miracles are investigated and approved, and the role they play in the lives of the faithful. We'll look at the miracles of the Gospels and early Christianity, considering the claims of the miraculous in our own modern age.
The Miracle Hunter, tomorrow at 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We've got 2 hours of just fun reviewing the year with Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers, and with Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers, and me, your host, Cy Kellett. And I'm just going to go for a big one now. I'm just going to, you know, because you can't save all the big ones for the end. You got to mix them in. I've watched the Academy Awards, and you got to do some of the big ones early to catch folks before they... head to bed.
Fall asleep before they fall asleep. Right.
I know I do. I need glasses for this. All right, let's see. So this one is going to be the biggest news story of 2021. It has, doesn't have to be Catholic. It's just the biggest news story of 2021. Any guesses about what that might be? Or maybe you have one in mind that you want to say, I would have voted for the biggest, what's the biggest news story of 2021?
I try not to watch the news, Cy.
Well, that might give you a better perspective on what the biggest news story was. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, what?
Catholic Answers Conference was
there it is.
Live and in person in
again,
September.
Next year, September 23rd to 25th, yeah. Right here in sunny San Diego. Go to CatholicAnswersConference.com. Joe, what about you? Got a story?
Honestly, the only thing that's coming to mind that I could think of from a U.S. perspective is the whole January 6th thing. Like, I feel like we're still talking about that.
I thought that as well.
It got 10 or 11 months later.
Yeah. It got a few votes. Yeah.
It was a story that was bigger than it was.
I mean, I didn't say it by date, you know? And so I feel like that says something about like, how many stories do you know by like the day they happen?
What about the pestilence in perpetuity, the perpetual pestilence? Is that?
Now we're getting there. All right. Here's number three. Of the biggest, giantest news stories of 2021, according to Catholic Answers listeners. Number three, I kind of group these together because we just allow people to say it any way they want. So I have to admit that the wording on some of these is different, but they all included the name Biden. And so Pope Francis being nice to Joe Biden, or Joe Biden being a poor Catholic, or some version of something with Biden in it came in third. And I'm going to be honest with you. I dreaded the election of Joe Biden, not as a host of Catholic Answers Live, because I thought what would happen is every question was going to be about why is Joe Biden going to communion for the whole year, you know, for the whole 4 years. And we have had that question a lot, and it's a perfectly reasonable question. There's no, but I don't know. People have not obsessed over it for the year. So,
it's because now they know about Eucharistic coherence.
But it has started a lot of positive conversations, I mean, about the Eucharist, or at least contributed to them, people's concern that, I mean, it's obvious that major Catholic politicians are promoting a view of human life that's not compatible with Christian faith or with the natural law.
Genocide is not compatible with faith or the natural law.
But I do think people are responding to that in many ways by trying to rethink or reproclaim the truth of the Eucharist and not just obsessing on the negative.
Amen. Well, you know, I think, look, I'm not a bishop. I think if I were a bishop and had a kind of a savvy approach to this, I would see if I had a high profile Catholic who wasn't a politician in my diocese who was living contrary to the faith. Because the response, the kind of knee jerk response people have is always like, well, you're getting involved in politics. But if it was something like a celebrity, you know, in a scandalous marriage situation or whatever the situation were, and they were still publicly receiving communion, that kind of situation could actually be a real kind of teaching moment. Where here, I do think there's been a pedagogical value to like having the conversation. I also think at this point we've had the conversation kind of ad nauseum for decades.
That's what it feels
since
like, yeah.
Mario Cuomo.
You know? No, it's Ted Kennedy back in the 70s.
In response to what Joe is saying there, and I think that's a good idea, and by the way, if Joe Heschmeyer were a bishop, I would want to live in that diocese.
I'd be very suspicious of the children, though.
It'd be a minor scandal.
We were talking about the Renaissance a little while ago, but in any case... But there is a difference here, and I don't even know, Joe, you can tell me if it's a material difference or not. The politicians are, in fact, promoting an evil act with legislation. The rock star in Kansas City, are there rock stars in Kansas City? They who are on their third wife or whatever, he's giving a bad example. To be sure, right. But he's not legislating, serial marriage.
You know what? It's a good point. I've thought about that, and I have a counter, which would be someone like Bill Gates. Where there's actually like promoting of evil. You know, supporting things like contraception globally,
right.
Supporting an abortion. You know, find someone doing those kinds of things. Not just someone. You're right. Like not just someone who's maybe got like. Personal sexual sin, something like that, where people can say that's a personal issue, leave them alone. But someone who's actively promoting it, but isn't easily lumped into a partisan.
I have the person. It's Ariana Grande, who's writing giant checks to Planned Parenthood.
Wow.
I think I got that right. Is Ariana Grande? Is she a singer?
She's a singer.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure it's her. Just. Double
Not
check
just a
that.
Syrup,
yeah, but she's Catholic, and yeah. So.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I had no idea she was Catholic.
Yeah.
See, I didn't know Bill Gates was Catholic until you told me that.
But do these people
that,
practice their faith? Are they?
I don't know.
Well, I think that's the issue. Like with politicians, they make a point of going to church, and so you have the extra scandal of the pictures of them receiving communion.
But this is all.
And I'm not sure you would get the same thing.
But there's always been there's always been the specter of the politician kind of cloaking themselves in religion, and so. Yeah. You always have to take a deep breath with politicians and religion because, they have to do hard things, controversial things, and sometimes they make compromises that you wouldn't want a person of faith to make. So this is always a problem. And it's hard to talk about, too, because our politics is so fraught and people feel like we're in a political emergency on both sides. Everybody's up in arms about it. So you criticize Joe Biden. Everyone says, well, what you're doing is helping the other side. Well, no, it's not our intention to help a politician or hurt a politician. We're trying to be clear about the morality of killing children.
Yeah, I think there's a certain group of people who are going to be closed off to hearing that message. I'm not sure there's a ton you can do with that. I hopefully there are people who are able to hear it and say, oh, I get what you're doing. I get why that matters to you, even if maybe I'm not previously in agreement on that, you know, that sort of thing, where they can hopefully learn something from it.
Well, the number two story for story of the year, and again, I grouped these together. The various court cases were mentioned, but the courts and Roe versus Wade was number two story of the year. I would have chosen it for story number one myself.
Well, it's because we don't have the answer yet.
It'll be the story of the year next year.
It'll be a big story in June or July or whenever that is.
Yeah.
The decision is released.
I just felt so like something is right in the world when you get an argument like you got at the Supreme Court this year, where both sides did their very best arguing. It was clear to me that the anti-Roe, pro-life sides arguments were far stronger, clearer, more competent. And I just loved it. I just thought in public, getting to make those arguments that the whole country's paying attention, this bodes well for us.
Well, the defenders.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that the defenders of Roe tacitly, if not more than tacitly, acknowledged. Look, okay, we get it. This is bad law, but
it's stare decisis.
We can't change the precedent.
Yeah, like it's bad law, but it's our bad law. So don't take
it
away.
Well, not just that, but I mean, because this is the whole question of like when and how do you overturn decisions? And there was the whole thing in Casey where you don't want to look like you're caving to public pressure, and I get all of that, But it creates this perverse situation where the laws that people are really having a lot of outcry, the ones that don't produce national peace, the court then doubles down in this really aggressively right. anti-democratic kind of way. That's a disaster for the court's reputation. Yeah. And I think we've talked about this before, Cy.
Yeah.
But like the Solicitor General, when she says like even Plessy v. Ferguson, which said segregation, you know, separate but equal was fine.
Right.
She argued that you wouldn't be able to overturn that right away because even if everyone knew it was egregiously wrong. The facts hadn't changed enough until like years and years down the road. That's such a crazy situation to find the Solicitor General arguing for segregation in 2021.
Right.
That it's insane. Hopefully wakes people up.
Yeah, I hope so. We'll get to the number one story of the year and all kinds of other categories voted on by our listeners. Pro-life person of the year, pro-life story of the year, Catholic story of the year, Catholic person of the year, and others. All to come after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
This is Debbie Giorgiani.
And I'm Jerry Usher.
Join us for Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, Monday at noon Eastern.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. This is the show I look forward to all year. And a couple of guys I really love talking to. As a matter of fact, I think we've had some fun conversations on the air this year. Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers, and Joe Heschmeyer, apologist at Catholic Answers.
Amen.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was looking for.
Can I get an amen?
Do I have to say it out loud? All right, right now we're counting down to the biggest Catholic stories, the Catholic Person of the Year, pro-life Person of the Year. Right now we are on the biggest news story of the year. This doesn't have to be a Catholic story. The number three was things having to do with Joe Biden. Number two, Roe versus Wade arguments and all the pro-life progress of the year. Number one. Join them all together. It's COVID. COVID wins again for story of the year. Congratulations, COVID.
Can I recommend an article in The Atlantic by our friend Matthew Walter?
I don't know if I've seen this either.
I saw this article.
Yeah, did either.
The one where he was just like, we're not sweating it here in Michigan.
Basically,
oh, yeah, 90%.
It was something like nobody in my town cares about COVID.
Right.
I actually think that's what it's called. It's extraordinary that this article appeared in The Atlantic, unless the editors at The Atlantic were trying to use this as an example of the things that, you know, the dumb crazy, people yeah. in rural Michigan say, or where I think that's where Matthew is. But it was a remarkable piece, and it speaks to a larger point with respect to Biden as well. So much of what we encounter in our daily lives has, as Samuel Johnson observed, you know, nothing to do with how small of all that human hearts endure, that part which laws or kings can cause or
yeah,
cure.
Right. Right. Nice going.
Yeah.
Mr. That Poetry. That was good. Joe, what do you think?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it also speaks to, you know, there have been a lot of books recently on the notion of kind of two Americas, a red America and a blue America, that aren't just divided by politics, not even primarily by politics, but you get like a rural-urban divide. You get just like a cultural divide.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
And so the responses on Twitter to the article you're talking about were really fascinating to me, because people were really speaking. I don't know if they were genuinely worried or if it was performative. I'm assuming it was real, but they were saying, this is dangerous. This is going to get people killed. And it's like, I don't imagine there's a single person who read this who thought, oh, I was extremely worried about COVID and now I'm apathetic. Like, either they're living in a situation where, you know, this is something they take very seriously, or they're already kind of checked out. What this really did was gave an insight, like a window into the other America.
Right.
That if, you know, I look like, Kansas City is such that if you go into the city itself, people are going to take it a lot more seriously. If you travel not far outside the city, you would not know COVID was even a thing.
Yes.
And if you never step across that liminal space, you just don't know the other way of living is even like still a thing. And that's dangerous as a polity. You know, it's dangerous as a polity to have no idea how half of America thinks about things, how they're viewing the world, you know?
Right.
And so the whole conversation about platforming him, it was just, I thought, so telling and in such a kind of depressing way.
Well, I'm going to share a little story with the two of you of something that happened to me right here in El Cajon about this. And this is what worries me about the COVID situation now, is the fact that we are all looking at each other and not sure how to deal with one another. I walked into 7-Eleven. My favorite store, because I had some Christmas shopping to do. All right. So I go to 7-Eleven.
Beef jerky.
Yeah.
But scratchers.
I tell you what, if someone gave me beef jerky and scratchers for Christmas, I'd cry. That is such a good gift.
I've received both of those things before. I'm not knocking it at all.
But so don't laugh at my Christmas shopping fancy pantses. All right. So I go into 7-Eleven.
And the hot dogs on the rollers that have just sort of been rolling all day on the rollers there.
Why are you guys picking on America's greatest shopping experience? Yeah. Why are you guys ripping on this?
And Slurpee. Right. There was a time in my life I went through Slurpees.
For people who don't know where we are in a city called El Cajon. So you go into 7-Eleven in El Cajon. Just to describe where we are, a few miles to the east of us is the rodeo grounds. A few miles to the west of us is the Coves of La Jolla. Okay, so we're in the middle of two worlds, a city world and
I'm not sure people know what the Coves of La Jolla are.
Well, it's kind of she beach, area. All right, so, but it's also an urban.
It's where Ariana Grande lives.
Is that, that's probably true.
La Jolla, I believe, is the.
It's not La Jolla. All right, so this, I want to describe for you my experience walking to 7-Eleven, because it's one of the weirdest experiences of my life. Governor Newsom, the governor of California, has proclaimed that we all have to wear masks indoors. I think where we are here in El Cajon, at least 80% of people don't want to listen to the governor.
They're ignoring it.
But there's a big sign in front of at the front of the 7-Eleven that says, due to governor's mandate, you must wear a mask on the premises. You can see through the windows because it's a 7-Eleven. At the checkout counter, a lovely young woman not wearing a mask. In line, half the people wearing masks, half the people not wearing masks. I'm standing outside the door with a mask in my hand. I look in, every single person eyes me. Like, which team are you going to be on?
Yes.
That's the experience I had. Honest, every single person, not the cashier, she's working, right? But every single person I get the eyeball from about, am I going to put that mask on or not? I put the mask on because I'm going to tell you why I put the mask on. I am the most ridiculous rule-following personality. Like, if you say the rule is this, I'm following the rule. So that's a pathetic way to live your life, but that's how I live my life. I'm doing my Christmas shopping at 7-Eleven. You get the idea of what kind of person I am. But as I'm going through the store, The eyeballing, everybody eyeballing everybody else. Are you a mask person or no mask person? Are you going to say something to me because I'm not wearing a mask? Are you going to say something to me because I am wearing a mask? This is the end of social life. This to me is apocalyptic. We can't live this way.
Yeah, it was bad enough before COVID where I had to figure out if I was supposed to keep my shoes on or take them off in other people's houses. And that level of like social anxiety is just like every time I walk into a building now, we're like, I want to be accommodating. I want everyone to feel at ease.
Right.
How do I do that? And it depends on the person. And you don't know. It's welcome to my world, Si. This is what it's like overthinking things.
You come to Top Meadow Cavaliers. I recommend you keep your shoes on. at the checkout.
Yeah. Yeah, right. But don't you think this is I mean, there's people who are absolutely determined that this mask is a sign that you are a good person.
Right.
Or other people, this mask is a sign that you are a sucker. I mean, we're all reading these signs and we have no, like, I don't want to go into 7-Eleven, my favorite store, and I'm just not sure whether a fight's about to break out over these masks.
I think about this a lot in the context of early Christianity, with all the debates about like food sacrifice to idols, about the commingling of Jewish and Gentile Christians. Like all of these things became these kind of team signifiers. And St. Paul is kind of like, just cut it out and get along with each other. And yeah, people didn't want to do that.
No. Right.
And unfortunately, we're in this kind of like weird star-bellied sneeches and non-star-bellied sneeches kind of situation.
Right.
So it's really unfortunate. I find it exhausting. I think a lot of people do.
It is exhausting, and it's exacerbated by, the Twitter or Twitter especially, but whatever the other platforms are.
But I feel like I know what to do in Los Angeles. Wear the mask or they will murder you. And I feel like I know what to do out in the desert. Stop it with the mask. All right. But I don't know what to do in El Cajon. Like, I don't know what to do in this town, which is halfway between these other extremes.
Yeah, it would help if they put like the mask mandate signs and then like a winking face or
I
not a winking
that.
Face.
I know.
So you could decide, okay, are they just putting this up so they don't get in trouble?
Right.
Or is this actually like the house rules? I mean, I want to be respectful both of the law and of the place in which I'm entering a private establishment. Like, yeah, it is exhausting to try to make everybody happy when people don't get along.
I don't even care about making them happy. I just want them to feel comfortable, and I want them to allow me to feel comfortable.
Well, that's what I mean.
When
you're
I'm getting unhealthy
like,
foods.
You're right.
You know? Like, I'm obviously here to buy things that are going to kill me in the long run.
The mask is not the health risk. You
yeah, right. Can we all leave each other alone while we get our packs of cigarettes and Little Debbies? You know? All right.
Oh, the oatmeal cream pies.
Oh,
I know those Little Debbie oatmeal cream pies. What is that about?
Yeah.
All right, well, we're moving on. Best pro-life story of the year. All right, we're doing the countdown to the biggest stories of the year, the persons of the year. Joe Heschmeyer, our guest, Chris Check, our guest. And our next topic, best pro-life story of the year. We asked
the Dobbs case.
Oh, you're going to guess
it? I mean, it seems like it seems like an easy one.
Sure.
Well, and that's fine. I'm going to take a break and we'll just leave it hanging in the air. Joe and Chris think it's easy. Is it easy? What's the best pro-life story of the year? Right back. We'll find out.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN has just increased my faith so much. I am a cradle Catholic, and I thought I knew my faith very well. But when Mother Angelica passed away and it was so much in the news, I learned all about EWTN and started listening all the time. And my eyes have been opened to my faith so much.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I don't even need to put on my reading glasses for this one. It's that easy to tell you the Catholic pro-life story of the year. I mean, if I wanted to divide it up and have a number one and a number two, it would be I'd have to figure out, and I didn't do this, so I'm not gonna do it. But I'd have to say the Texas law or the Mississippi law, and there are various court cases that came with those two laws. But that's it. Everybody's talking about those two. One person chose for pro-life story of the year: any woman who put her baby up for adoption instead of ending the pregnancy. God bless you for that. That's a beautiful sentiment. Every single other person had the Dobbs case or the Texas case. That was it. There's no question.
I had my differences with the Trump administration, to be sure, but this is the victory of his administration, the amount of judges that he appointed. Because the decisions on the Texas case, which I tested multiple times, would not have gone the way they were, I don't think.
That is the case, and I'll tell you what, everybody knew it during that vote in 2016, too. If people can't say, well, you know, this is an accident of history that accidentally Trump got elected, and that's what, no, millions and millions of people knew exactly what was on the line, the Supreme Court. And one side
not
won,
just the,
and
not
one
just
side
the,
lost.
Not just the court, but circuit courts. And
Yeah, right. Yeah. But primarily the Supreme Court, because you cannot do anything until this Roe v. Wade, this terrible law, this embarrassment to the idea of constitutionality and human decency.
And common good.
Gets overturned. And so the 2016 election came down. It was 50 years or whatever of pro-life work is what put Donald Trump over the top. I'm not saying that every vote was a pro-life vote, but without that difference between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, and I'm going to be very honest with you, at the time, neither of whom I had any interest in. I did not like either candidate that election. And I know that I don't like to reveal but I just felt uncomfortable with the whole thing. But for millions of people, and I met thousands of them personally, the question was, who's going to do what to the courts? And that's why Donald Trump won.
Hillary. It'll be really fascinating to see what happens when and if the court overturns Roe, because that whole political calculus could change. Now, there are a lot of ways that could go. If this starts becoming a national political issue at the legislative level, then I think you'll continue to see abortion playing out on a political stage in the same way. But if this is something where Congress says, you know what, let California and Mississippi have separate laws, and then leaves it up to the states as kind of laboratories of democracy, you could see a real shift in where and how the pro-life movement is kind of operating. I'm very interested in seeing what happens next.
It's going to be better than what we got now.
One thing I think we will continue to see, Joe, I'd be interested in your thought here. I don't think there has been, well, certainly not in my lifetime, but deliberate migration from one state to another at the level that we're seeing it to live in a certain political climate.
Absolutely.
And I think it's mostly, I never get these red and blue correct, which is—
Because they reversed it so you wouldn't have the color red associated with liberalism, because red is the communism.
Red is Republican.
Reds are Republicans.
Yeah. So I think especially seeing people moving out of blue states and into red ones.
It's been fascinating. I mean, certainly from California, you are seeing a net loss.
Well, our population went down.
For a lot of us.
Yeah. Honestly, I think the primary reason people are leaving California, though, is housing is too expensive. People cannot afford to live here. And so when a state is so dysfunctional that it can't even provide housing that a normal person can afford, then people have to leave.
That's
but
true.
But I also know a lot of people who are like, I'm going to Idaho.
Yes.
And they're going to Idaho because Idaho seems sane.
I have been party to these conversations of people saying, I want to live in a more sane part of the world.
Yeah, they're just, they can't take
it. I guess
it.
I should give a shout out now to my in-laws who moved from California to Idaho. You can probably fill in the rest of the details. Yeah.
I know a guy in my neighborhood, not on my street, but in my neighborhood. Okay, they come from Idaho to kind of have their senior years in Southern California. They're here 7 or 8 years. Then they sell their house because they're sick of California for $500,000 more than they bought it for. Wow. They go back to Idaho. I thought, well, they did it just right. They did it exactly the way you should do it.
In our own circle here, Cy, with assistant producer Marie and her extended family, which is pretty much half of East County, San Diego, a bunch of them moving to La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right. Right. Moving to Wisconsin. We know about Texas. Yeah. I mean, we're at Catholic Answers is losing people to Texas.
Yeah.
You know, we're already losing people to Texas and more who talk about it.
Let's tie this, if I may, into the abortion issue.
Please
I'm really interested in what that does for state level abortion politics. And if they're sometimes kind of surprising. So like here in Kansas, we're burdened with a really embarrassing state Supreme Court decision that was 6-1. A few years ago, declaring a state-level right to abortion, finding it in the Kansas Constitution. So we're dealing with the Value Them Both amendment here that tries to undo that. But as with the Dobbs case at the Supreme Court, it's not going to solve the abortion issue. It's just going to get rid of the barrier to solving the issue. You see what I mean by that?
Now
you can legislate. Now the democratic process can start.
Right. That's what happened. There was no democratic process for 50 years and now or however many years.
I prefer the adjective federal, the federal process, because this is a question of the authority of the state.
Sure.
It's homicide. And that is for the states to decide.
I have to be quite honest. I do. And I know that I am a radical in this. I don't even believe it's an issue for the states. I believe with the improvements in technology, the understanding of the life of the child since 1874, the life of the child in the womb, the 14th Amendment applies to the child in the womb. And I know that that makes me a complete idiot as far as lawyers are concerned, but I believe there is a right to life. There is in the US Constitution, in the 14th Amendment, and because we know about where we've had changes in our scientific understanding of the development of life since the passing of the 14th Amendment, I don't care about what the judges say about, well, that's not what they meant when they passed it. Doesn't matter. What we know now means you add these two things together, there is a right to life in the womb.
Yeah, I had an interesting conversation about just this point with a guy who teaches up at Benedictine last week. And his argument was what the framers or, you know, what the drafters of the amendment meant to do was protect life, liberty, and sort of happiness of people who were alive. And if their knowledge of embryology was, you know, inadequate,
right,
that's not a limitation on the scope of what they're trying to do with the law. Likewise, I mean, they didn't seem to treat African Americans with full humanity. But what the scope of what the law said and what it said it was doing logically applies. And so just as you expanded in the one area, you should expand it in the other and say, okay, look.
I'm the odd man out here. The 14th Amendment increased the power of the central government.
Oh, it did, without question. Yeah.
But it is the law of the land.
It is the law of the land. And I don't, I mean, on moral grounds, I have to say there's motivated reasoning on my part.
If it can be used in this regard, I'm at peace with that at this point in my political trajectory.
Right.
But it is a question reserved to the states. The states don't really even exist anymore.
Well, they're going to exist more now. Because of this jurisprudence. It will matter what a state is more than it did before. But I have to tell you, everyone assumes that I watch on TV, oh, this is going to really hurt Republicans because now they're going to have to put their money where their mouth is. Well, first of all, there's a lot more pro-life people than you think, especially if pro-life is defined as, well, not in the second trimester, not in the third trimester. But secondly, you know, you have these people grandstanding in California saying things like, because we're a very pro-abortion state. And so the legislators are saying, we're going to be an abortion sanctuary. And we're going to spend state money.
Two words that don't go together.
To fly women from Texas to have their abortion here. Well, try to sell that to the voters of California. Because you can say that now, because you're not that. But the California voters are not going to vote for people who spend state money to abort other people's babies. They're going to say, well, maybe we get, you know, no lead in the water for African-American communities. Like, there's going to be ads that are going to run against these people. So they're going to have to fight this out in the real world. And I don't think abortion wins in the real world.
Yeah. They've used the scare tactic of, oh, you know, coat hanger abortions, back alley abortions for 50 years. And I think when people realize that's not what actually is going to happen.
Right.
That a lot of, I think you're actually going to see, now maybe I'm being overly optimistic. I think you're going to see a shift in people's perceptions, because I think a lot of people who, you know, would describe themselves as personally pro-life are nevertheless worried about unintended consequences of any kind of pro-life regime. And I think when they see it in person, depending on how, you know, of course the media will try to spin it and craft a certain narrative. But I think when they actually see that it's not as dystopian as they were led to believe, you might see some hearts and minds getting changed with that. The law is pedagogical. That's the other thing. You know, a lot more people thought slavery was either good or at least a necessary evil until the law changed around slavery. And then they thought, oh, okay, turns out we can live without this and should have been living without this the whole time.
And I feel like, I mean, we don't have a decision yet overturning Roe v. Wade.
True.
But I feel like the expectation on every side is that we're going to. So if we don't, I don't know what's going to happen. I remember the Casey decision and just the sense of shock that Justice Kennedy did what he did. Yeah. And the sense of utter betrayal that came with that. Utterly stupid decision. But what if that happens again?
I don't see the numbers for it. I mean, I can think of one justice who would, you know, a chief justice perhaps, who would perhaps take the Kennedy spot. Yeah. And he tried to, but neither party, you know, neither side of the debate was willing to grant any middle ground on this, which was really a fascinating thing. And very cleverly, I think, the state of Mississippi said basically, look, if you're uneasy about being in the center of this, butt out. Like, just leave it up to the legislative process. You don't have to decide everything. Now, they stopped short of Chris's position and, you know, a position that I think is totally, oh, I'm sorry, excuse me, Cy's position that, like, maybe the court should just outlaw abortion nationwide.
That's not going
to
happen.
They just said basically, like, right, if you, but it'd be nice to see the Overton window move. It'd be nice to get one concurrence that said, I concur in Roe v. Wade being overturned. I actually think we can go further. That changes the conversation in a really interesting way that could be good. But I'd be happy just with the court saying Roe was a mistake, mea culpa, and undoing it.
What if they just uphold the Mississippi law and don't overturn Roe? They just say, yeah, you can have a 15-week law. Because Justice Roberts seemed to be saying, well, that's plenty of time for a woman to make up her mind. So why not just choose that as a line, 15? And then the next state will do 14.
Isn't this the most likely scenario?
I don't think so. I think the likely scenario is overturning Roe.
I think part of the reason it's not the most likely scenario is that Casey didn't work. Like, Casey was basically trying to do this. It scrapped the trimester framework of Roe and described itself as just preserving the essential holding of Roe. Rehnquist in the dissent described it as like a movie house where you just have the front of the house and everything else has been destroyed. Yeah. You know, like a Western set that, like, the Roe decision was preserved in name, but all of the internal reasoning was rejected by Casey. Well, that didn't work. That didn't solve it. And so then the line got redrew. It didn't work. So we could keep doing that for another half decade or half century. Or we could just say, stop. Like,
just be intellectually honest and say that there's no right to abortion in the Constitution.
I'm not arguing which decision
is better.
Is the most intellectually coherent.
Sure.
Which is the one they're most likely to pursue? These are human persons involved here.
Well, I think even if Justice Roberts goes with not overturning Roe and says, you know, in what would probably be a lone dissent, joined by no one, says we should just allow the 15-week. But even if he did that, you still have five votes to overturn Roe, it looks like. Right. So I have to be honest, I have my hopes up, and it's going to devastate me if it's anything less than that. I want to be that wise person who says, well, don't count your chickens before they hatch. But I've got chickens
unborn
all over
chickens
the place.
Are still unborn chickens are still chickens. That's the point of this.
That's the whole point. Thank you, Joe. Unborn chickens are still chickens. Hey, whenever we do this, when I get the opportunity to have these panel conversations with you, which we are going to continue next hour, I always have some audio for you from National Public Radio, and I don't this time. The audio that we are going to play is not from National Public Radio because someone defeated National Public Radio in saying goofy things about sex or religion, which usually you think the goofiest things being said on the national stage about sex or religion are going to be on National Public Radio, that they're going to defeat anyone else, but they didn't this time. So next hour, I've got some not National Public Radio audio, but some other audio for you in the moral realm having to do with religious people and sex, and you're just going to love it. But we're also going to do Pro-Life Person of the Year, Catholic Person of the Year, and Catholic Story of the Year when we come back in the second hour. You both will come back, right?
I have a special announcement in the second hour.
Yeah. Oh, you do?
Yeah.
What? Look at him teasing that.
That's how you do it, Si.
I'm speechless now, and that's the one thing you're not supposed to be is speechless. Great job teasing second hour. Because we didn't, I'm very much looking forward to what your announcement is.
Oh, everyone listening is going to want to hear this.
Everyone, don't go anywhere. We have audio that's better than National Public Radio, and we have a big announcement from the president of Catholic Answers. Joe, anything?
Well, no, I just feel like your other announcement was like, hey, guys, you're not in the frying pan, but guess what? You might be in the fire.
All right, all that coming up right after this on Catholic Answers Live.